Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, March 8th, 2021. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho House panel passes Senator Vick's bill to make it virtually impossible to get an initiative on the Idaho ballot. The bill now heads to the full House. Disability groups drop lawsuit against Idaho legislature over lack of COVID protection after consent decree. And Representative Brandon Mitchell of Moscow proposes voter suppression bill targeting students. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. By party line vote, the Idaho House State Affairs Committee today passed a bill from Senator Steve Vick of Dalton Gardens to make it nearly impossible to get a citizens' initiative on the statewide ballot. The two Democrats on the committee voted against it. The vote was 11-2. Senate Bill 1110 has already passed the Senate. It's already very difficult to get citizens' initiatives on the statewide ballot because current law requires signatures from 6% of registered voters in 18 out of the 35 legislative districts. Senator Vick's bill would require signatures from 6% of the registered voters from all 35 of Idaho's legislative districts in order to get an initiative on the ballot. Here's Senator Vick presenting his bill to the committee today.
The significance of this is that it doesn't require any more signatures. It just requires them to be gathered in different places. So this legislation relates to signature gathering for initiative petitions. And it changes from 18 districts to 35 districts how many districts you have to collect signatures in. You should have a map in your packet that highlights Kootenai, Canyon, Ada, and Bonneville County. Currently, you can collect every signature you need to get a petition, an initiative petition on the ballot in these four counties. You don't have to leave those four counties, and you can collect every signature you needed. Now, that's not happened. They tend to collect in other places, but that's possible because there are 18 districts in those four counties. And it's possible after redistricting, you might not even need those four counties. You might be able to, and I don't know this because we don't have the results yet, but it's possible you could lose either Kootenai or Bonneville County after that. And so you might only need three counties. And so the purpose of this is provide equity to all legislative districts.
That was Senator Steve Vick of Dalton Gardens speaking to the Idaho House State Affairs Committee. The current system became law in 2013 after Idaho citizens took matters into their own hands in 2012 and used the initiative process to scrap the state's so-called Luna laws, named after then-Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Luna, which would have eliminated teacher tenure, based teachers' evaluations partly on student academic performance, established a performance-based pay system for teachers, and would have required students to take two online or blended courses to graduate from high school. Citizens rejected the Luna laws using an initiative process that had been in place for decades, simply requiring signatures from 6% of registered voters statewide to get an initiative on the ballot. The legislature's 2013 changes to the initiative process greatly complicated signature gathering and increased the number of rejected signatures, since those signing initiatives must know which legislative district they live in so they can sign the correct petition. Signature gatherers must now carry multiple petitions if they want to collect signatures from people who live in different legislative districts. Idaho citizens took matters into their own hands again in 2018, using the initiative process to require Medicaid expansion to get health care to the thousands of Idahoans in the Medicaid insurance gap. The next year, lawmakers sought to get their revenge on the voters, not only passing many sideboards to limit Medicaid expansion, but also passing a law requiring signatures from 10% of the voters in 32 out of Idaho's 35 legislative districts, and reducing the amount of time for gathering signatures from 18 months to 6 months. Governor Brad Little vetoed that bill after widespread public outcry. The sponsor of the 2019 bill was Republican Senator C. Scott Groh of Eagle. Senator Groh had indicated he was concerned Idahoans might put a medical or recreational marijuana initiative on the ballot, and he is currently pushing through his proposed constitutional amendment, which would need voter approval to lock in Idaho's drug laws so it would be unconstitutional to legalize medical or recreational cannabis. The committee took public testimony on the bill today, with 16 speaking against the bill and 7 speaking in favor. Here's some of that testimony before the House State Affairs Committee in Boise this morning.
I am Luke Prang. I'm from the Limhi County Democratic Party in Limhi County and District 8, and it's hard to get more rural than that. And I'm a little confused because the discussion is about letting cities override the rural areas. But this is just to get an initiative on the ballot. This isn't rule. This is allowing us to talk about and to vote on issues. Now, the one vote, one person comes into effect in the November election, when these would be on the ballot, rather than why not give us a chance to have a say about these diverse issues that may be brought up by the initiative process. Since 2013, there have been 15 attempts to put initiatives on the ballot, and only 2 have succeeded. Now, that doesn't seem to be a burden on the voters of Idaho to learn about these initiatives when they go to vote. I think it would increase the amount of external funding needed to get anything on the ballot at all. It seems to me that whoever sponsored this legislation and supports it is afraid of the people of Idaho voting on things they care about. That's all. Thank you.
My name is Terry Wilson, and I'm a member with Black Lives Matter Boise, a grassroots organization focused on centering the voices of Black, Indigenous, and persons of color. And we would like to echo our constituents in that this bill would make it virtually impossible for any grassroots initiatives to qualify to be on the ballot, to be voted on. And it's extremely difficult already. So to make it more difficult only would suggest that the goal would be to limit the voices of the marginalized in this state. Being that it requires signatures from 6% of registered voters in 18 districts, that is already difficult, and that's why in the past 20 years, as Representative Gannon pointed out, that Senator Vick failed to answer, is that only 2 successful ballots in the last 2 decades would suggest that this process is already fundamentally challenging for people. And would the new model would lend itself to the powerful and the rich. And the goal is for these measures to begin with is to uplift voices that are otherwise unheard. And so the ballot initiative is a constitutional right of every Idaho citizen. And we're here to stand against SB 1110, excuse me. And what we hope to achieve is that for our voices to be heard, because as a stage 4 cancer survivor, without Medicaid expansion, I wouldn't be alive today.
Brian Searle, I live in Shelley. I'm a farmer, and I also represent Idaho Farm Bureau. And so, Mr. Chairman and committee members, it's my privilege to address you. I stand in support of Senate Bill 1110, and I view this as an opportunity to have everyone's voice across this great state heard. I think that we all deserve that right in every legislative district. This bill provides an opportunity for every district to speak up if so needs be to get something onto the ballot. Why do we have concerns as it stands today? Because we have precedent set by other states as to what's happened by things that's got on the ballot. For example, in Colorado, we see where the wolves were reintroduced. That was done from a ballot initiative. Those individuals who voted for that were flooded with special interest dollars from outside of the state of Colorado and give information. None of those voters will probably ever see a wolf, but those who will be affected will be those farmers, ranchers, individuals who are devastated by losses that come from the wolves. These are the kinds of things that concern us by having that placed on the ballot. So I'd encourage you to look hard and long that each and every individual, each legislative district has a fair opportunity and to be able to have their say rather than eight districts that comes from four counties currently in the state to decide what goes on the ballot and then influenced by outside dollars. So I'd encourage you to vote in favor of SB 1110. Thank you.
Okay, my name is Linda Larson and I represent myself. I've lived in Sandpoint for the past 34 years and I was the Reclaim Idaho co-leader for Bonner County for the entire Medicaid expansion effort. Our team needed to collect 1,780 valid signatures. For various reasons, we averaged around a 70% validity rate. This meant that we actually needed to collect 2,300 signatures, or about 8% of the registered voters. Myself and my team members dedicated well over 20 hours per week for many months in order to qualify District 1. My job was spent mostly on the phone and on the computer, but my volunteers, who collected signatures, stood mostly outdoors, many times in freezing, snowy conditions for hours at a time. I'd like to share one story that illustrates just how hard this work is. One day, four volunteers went door to door in a, quote, neighborhood in Sagal. The addresses were hard to find and often many miles apart. Many people were not home, and when they were home, the conversations were long. After 4 hours, the volunteers collected 10 signatures, and of those, only six were actually valid. To top it off, one of my volunteers, who was nearly 80 at the time, got very ill from a day's work and was so sick it took her nearly 3 weeks to recover. This work is really hard. And yet we felt like we had no choice. We all knew friends and family members who were suffering. We felt that we, the people, had to bring Medicaid expansion to Idahoans, because our representatives, for whatever reason, could not. This bill would essentially eliminate the citizens' initiative process, and I urge you to vote no on SB 1110, and I stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Are there questions for Ms. Larson? Representative Mathias has a question for you, Ms. Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Similar question. Hopefully I'll keep it in the parameters of order. Ms. Larson, you just mentioned that you worked with a number of volunteers on your effort. I'm curious, how many volunteers total in your county did you work with or in your legislative district? And were there any paid signature gatherers involved?
Ms. Larson?
There were no paid signature collectors physically present in Sandpoint. I know that because I'm the petition keeper, the keeper of the petitions. So I can look at each petition and the notary has to notarize where they notarize. So on there, I can tell where the petitions came from. So I could clearly see that there were no, that the ones that came in from, quote, fieldworks, they were coming in from other counties. And according to my records, we had over 150 volunteers in District 1. So that was combining Boundary County with my county volunteers, about 150 volunteers.
Chairman Crane, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Holly Condy. I represent Conservation Voters for Idaho. CVI is a bipartisan organization that does not litigate. We bring people together, not to court, to work on policy affecting Idaho. At CVI, we talk with citizens from all over the state regularly. We've found Idahoans on the whole are informed, engaged individuals who place high value on our constitutional rights, including the right to bring an initiative to the ballot. In debating Senate Bill 1110, Senator Cook on the floor said that this would make the ballot initiative process more difficult, and that that was a good thing. I disagree with any attempts to put roadblocks on our constitutional rights. Bringing an initiative to the ballot is a right under Article 3, Section 1 of the Idaho Constitution. It states, the people reserve to themselves the power to propose laws and enact the same at the polls independent of the legislature. Note the use of the phrase, the people. Senate Bill 1110 would make the bar so high that only very well-funded, wealthy groups could bring an initiative. We know Idaho is a big state geographically, so tying the initiative to geography does raise the bar. It does make it harder. As Senator Cook conceded, it will make the process more difficult. This change will prohibit Idahoans from exercising their constitutional right. This is not about rural versus urban or left versus right. People across the state value this tool. As those before me have testified, Idahoans from all over the state participate. Senate Bill 1110 adds hurdles between Idahoans and their rights, it adds hoops to jump through and unnecessarily burdens citizens, and it will not benefit us. Senate Bill 1110 is an infringement on our constitutional rights, and I urge your no vote on this legislation. This is a battle the citizens have fought before and do not wish to fight again.
I'm Gary Hoffman. I'm a physician in Blaine County, and I represent informed public opinion. For weeks, we've heard a lot of horse feathers thrown around while parsing Senator Vick's self-serving bill. At the last meeting, besides Senate Bill 1110, we heard a great self-pitying testimony about disenfranchisement of the legislature and the implied dictatorial powers of the governor over the legislature concerning special sessions and other actions. This represents shameless hypocrisy on the part of those who support
this. Mr. Chairman, I object. I object to this line of testimony.
Hey, Gary?
Yes.
Make sure on your testimony you're not impugning the motives of individuals. So try to keep the personalities out of it. Stick to the merits of the legislation, okay?
Very good. Can I have my time back then?
Certainly. I will work with you on your time.
I'm sure that senators can come up with reasons why the Idaho Senate needs to muzzle the voters of Idaho, including those who fought the past losing battle to render Medicaid expansion impotent, even though disenfranchising many thousands of Idahoans who stood to benefit greatly. We worked very hard to get Medicaid expansion through the ballot initiative process, even with the requirement of 2/3 of ballots cast. It was the will of the people, coupled with volunteer organization, that allowed us to defeat entrenched powers. Is that what the status quo Senate is so fearful of? Those who would go against those in government who would deny them an opportunity to make their voices and wishes into law? What is the Senate afraid of? Women's reproductive rights on the ballot? Infrastructure, medical care, education on the ballot? Things that we as Idahoans lag terribly behind on? Stifling tax cuts for the well-off? Fear of future redistricting to disenfranchise voters? Sensible gun responsibility laws? We need public recognition that voters have the right to initiate legislation in spite of obstructive efforts of those who refuse to relinquish selfish power.
That was some of the testimony before the Idaho House State Affairs Committee today on Senate Bill 1110, which would require signatures from 6% of registered voters in all 35 of Idaho's legislative districts in order to get an initiative on the ballot. Once again, the Idaho House State Affairs Committee voted 11-2 along party lines to advance the bill to the full House. The bill has already passed the Idaho Senate. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is supported by listeners like you and the Idaho Walk Bike Alliance, promoting active transportation as healthy, safe, and reliable for all Idahoans. More information is available at idahowalkbike.org.
KRFP is also sponsored by
Fiddler's Ridge Farm, a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving the Palouse since 1992. Two locations to serve you, 2730 Highway 95 South in Moscow and 1001 Fiddler's Ridge Loop in Potlatch.
208-875-1003. The Idaho House voted 44 to 26 today to legalize industrial hemp. Republican Representative Lori Lickley of Jerome said, "We're really ready to give our farmers and our processors the ability to have an option. We have a company in the Magic Valley that is ready. Their production lines are ready to roll the minute the bill is signed by the governor. Let's give our farmers an alternative crop." Republican Representative Dorothy Moon of Stanley, a supporter of industrial hemp, said she would vote against the bill because it doesn't also legalize a medicine made from the cannabis plant, CBD oil, which has less than 0.3% THC. Moon said, "We need to remove hemp from Schedule 1 as all the other states have." The bill now heads to the Senate. Republican Representative Brandon Mitchell of Moscow has introduced a bill to ban the use of photo student IDs for voting. Senator Regina Bauer of Meridian has sponsored the bill in the Senate. The bill would require a driver's license or another document with the voter's current address. Currently in Idaho, those who vote in person must show a photo ID or sign an affidavit attesting they are who they say they are. In order to register to vote, people must present a piece of mail with their current address on it. In Idaho, residents can register to vote at the polls on Election Day. Representative Mitchell said his bill would allow voters who cannot afford a driver's license to maintain another type of ID from the State Transportation Department. A fiscal note with the bill says it would cost up to $2 million to offer the alternative IDs, meaning the bill will also have to go through the Joint Finance Appropriations Committee before it can make it to the floor. Mitchell lost an election for Moscow City Council in 2019 as part of a conservative bloc of three candidates in an election in which University of Idaho students voted heavily. He told the Idaho Statesman, "Voters have used high school IDs and Amazon boxes in Moscow to verify their current addresses," implying that's a bad thing. House Minority Leader Elena Rubel of Boise said the bill will make it difficult for young voters and students to vote where they live. Rubel said during a press conference with legislative Democrats last week, "We have very low levels of young people engaging in voting. We think, if anything, we should be trying to boost participation in our democracy, not spend $2 million as this bill proposes to do to suppress it." Mitchell said, "We're trying to make it as easy as possible, but yet still secure so that we don't have people voting in areas they're not supposed to be voting. It's kind of like we don't have a fire right now, so why do we need a fire extinguisher? So we're trying to fix it before it becomes a problem." He said the bill could change, and he could change it so students can vote with a student ID if there was a way to verify birth dates to make sure students are at least 18. Disability Action Groups and Idaho Citizens negotiated a consent decree in their lawsuit against the Idaho legislature over COVID safety at the state capitol, settling the case. Five of the 30 disability rights groups that sued the legislature and House Speaker Scott Bedke of Oakley and Senate President Pro Tem Chuck Winder of Boise and two Idaho residents negotiated the settlement, which the parties filed Thursday. The consent decree will allow people with disabilities to testify remotely at hearings. Legislative leaders must continue with COVID-19 safety, which includes making social distancing work, virtual access to meetings, and improvements to the Capitol building's heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system. According to the Idaho Statesman, the settlement says committee chairs must, quote, "make reasonable efforts to provide equal opportunities for in-person and remote testimony." Previously, it was up to committee chairs' discretion whether to allow remote testimony during the coronavirus pandemic. The legislature must pay up to $5,500 to employ a third party to recommend improvements to digital access to meetings and documents. Disability Rights Idaho Executive Director Amy Cunningham said in a news release Friday, "No one should have to choose between their health and their right to petition their government. The Americans with Disabilities Act provides important protections and here ensures that persons with disabilities can receive the same government services as persons without disabilities." House Speaker Scott Bedke said, "It wasn't just lip service when I said we were going to ensure that everyone could safely take part in the legislative process. We have risen to the challenges of these trying times, making important infrastructure improvements, and we will continue to look for ways to make this process more accessible to all Idahoans." So far this legislative session, there have been several publicly known COVID-19 cases among those that work at the state capitol. Some were staffers, and two senators tested positive last month, and one was hospitalized. Republican Senator Van Burtenshaw of Territon was hospitalized in fair condition at Eastern Idaho Regional Medical Center and has since recovered and returned to the state house. The Associated Press reports many lawmakers, mostly Republicans, go throughout their workday at the Capitol without masks or social distancing. The legislature has installed plexiglass barriers around lawmakers' desks on the floors of both chambers if the lawmakers request them, and plexiglass barriers are used in some committee meetings. Joint Finance Appropriations Committee co-chair Senator Steve Baer of Blackfoot tested positive and recovered at home last month. His co-chair, Representative Rick Youngblood of Nampa, went into isolation for a time, leaving committee vice chair Carolyn Nilsen Troy of Genesee to run the meetings. As of the middle of last month, one Senate attaché and three House staff members had tested positive since the legislative session began January 11th. Two Democratic House members, Democratic State Representatives Muffy Davis of Ketchum and Sue Chu of Boise, had filed a separate lawsuit against the legislature in January over the lack of COVID-19 prevention at the Capitol. The two have since dropped their lawsuit. Their attorney, Democratic House member John Gannon of Boise, said they dropped their lawsuit because they had both been vaccinated. Davis and Chu asked in their lawsuit for House Speaker Bedke to provide self-contained offices for the legislative session instead of cubicles and to allow them to attend the session and vote remotely from their offices. Davis is a paraplegic and was a world-famous Paralympic athlete. She's confined to a wheelchair because of a ski racing accident when she was 16. The accident also left her with impaired lung function. Once the session had begun, Davis distributed a letter to House members from her doctor who said Davis's spinal injury from the ski racing accident had severely diminished her ability to cough. The doctor wrote, "Were she to contract COVID-19, this would likely be a life-threatening proposition for her." The letter came with a proposal that the House vote to suspend the rules and allow her to participate in democracy as a lawmaker remotely from home. The House voted along party lines to reject the proposal. At the time, Republican Representative Brent Crane of Nampa defended his no vote, saying she took an oath of office, and when she ran for office, she knew what the rules were. Residents of four school districts in Latah County will vote tomorrow on school levies. Latah County elections officials have announced changes to some polling places. The school districts in Latah County holding school levies tomorrow are Genesee, Kendrick, Potlatch, and Troy. Troy School District voters will be asked to approve a one-year $995,000 supplemental levy. Genesee School District voters will be asked to approve a one-year $985,000 supplemental levy. Potlatch School District voters will be asked to approve a one-year $1.65 million supplemental levy, and the Kendrick Joint School District will be asked to approve a two-year levy amounting to $810,000 per year. There's also a levy election in the Highland School District just outside of Latah County. Under Idaho's voter ID law, those who want to vote in person must bring a photo ID or sign an affidavit saying they are who they say they are. People can register at the polls on Election Day by bringing a piece of mail, rental agreement, or utility bill showing their current address. Election officials have moved Potlatch Precinct Number 27, which voted at Rebecca Hall previously, and Palouse Precinct Number 26, which voted at Scenic Six Park previously, to the Potlatch High School Gymnasium for more space and better parking. Polls will be open from 8 a.m. until 8 p.m. tomorrow. The Washington Senate voted 25-24 Saturday night to approve a capital gains tax, something Republican opponents say is an unconstitutional income tax. The bill would create a 7% tax on sales of stocks and bonds, personal property, and businesses when annual profits exceed $250,000. Retirement accounts would be exempt. Democratic senators say the state needs to correct its regressive tax structure, which has the poor paying more of their share of taxes because of the lack of an income tax. The tax is expected to bring $500 million a year to state coffers. Democratic Governor Jay Inslee tweeted Saturday, "Only a small percentage of our state's wealthiest taxpayers will be impacted, yet it will help to strengthen and balance the entire system." The bill now heads to the House. The Spokane Regional Health District reported 77 new coronavirus cases in Spokane County yesterday. There have been 37,684 cases of the virus in the county since the pandemic began, with a total of 591 deaths. Washington has had 325,000 cases of the virus, with 5,041 deaths as of Saturday. Health workers in Washington have administered 100,000 COVID vaccine doses so far. The Lewiston police say a prosecutorial review by the Clearwater County prosecutor says Lewiston police officer James Allen was acting in self-defense when he shot and killed 40-year-old Cole Blevins December 27th at a home on Powers Avenue. The Lewiston Tribune website says the Lewiston police press release quotes the prosecutorial review saying, "Officer Allen's actions were appropriate, did not violate criminal law, and are found to be justifiable based on the grounds of self-defense." Someone called police to the Lewiston Orchards residence because they suspected child abuse. Police say Blevins and a juvenile met Officer Allen at the door, and Blevins reached into a chair and pulled out a handgun and pointed it at Allen. They say Allen fired his weapon three times at Blevin, who died later after ambulance crews took him to St. Joseph Regional Medical Center. The Idaho State Police conducted the investigation and forwarded its findings to the Clearwater County Sheriff's Office for final review. Clarkston police have arrested John C. Weber of Clarkston on charges of second-degree murder. The Clarkston Police Department said in a news release, Weber killed his girlfriend at a home in the 1100 block of 5th Street at 10:30 a.m. yesterday. Police responded to someone calling in a suicide attempt, and police found a woman with a gunshot wound to the head. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. There is a 50% chance of precipitation tonight. Chance of rain and snow before 8 p.m., then a chance of snow. Cloudy, low around 30. Total nighttime snow accumulation, less than half an inch. 30% chance of precipitation tomorrow. Chance of snow before 10 a.m., then a slight chance of rain and snow before noon, then a slight chance of rain. Snow level rising to 3,400 feet in the afternoon. Cloudy through mid-morning, then gradual clearing with a high of 43. Little or no snow accumulation expected. Tomorrow, mostly clear, low 27, patchy fog after 4 a.m. Tuesday night. And on Wednesday, 20% chance of precipitation, slight chance of snow before noon, then a slight chance of rain, patchy fog before 8 a.m., otherwise mostly sunny, high 45. Currently 38 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP. Be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. You can also go to the KRFP website, where there's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can adopt a DJ. You can underwrite programming, letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. There's a Patreon button, and there's a PayPal option. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Coming up next, Eat the Airwaves Part 2, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. And then music will commence sometime around just before 8 p.m. through to the evening. Chia Pets on the air 9 to 11, and Rotten Rob's Dumpster Dive on with heavy metal 11 p.m. till 1 a.m. Hour of Slack at 1 a.m. Stay tuned for more KRFP Moscow Pullman. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night.
KRFP is sponsored by Mikey's Euros, specializing in Greek and Middle Eastern cuisine, such as Euros, falafel, hummus, and tabbouleh, located at 527 South Main Street in Moscow.
For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to krfp.org and click Support KRFP.